Love this podcast? Support this show through the Acast Supporter feature. It's up to you how much you give and there's no regular commitment. Just hit the link in the show description to support now.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50. Luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-.
So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
An ancient kingdom with legends of violence, cruelty, and torment in its blood. Join your hosts, Ross, John, and James, as they bravely tread where few would dare. Witness their journey into the horrific history of British horror. They are the General Witchfinders.
So we're back, ladies and gentlemen, goblins and ghouls. Happy New Year!
Happy New Year, 2024.
2024.
Wow.
Oh, well, it is. Future. Yeah, because it's not 2024 yet, James, because it's still.
It's ticking down. We're ticking down.
By the time you listen to this, it probably might be.
Where are we on the tickometer now?
Oh, so look. I will edit this in at the end to say exactly. So it ends at midnight. Right.
So where are we on the tickometer?
About 28 minutes.
Wow. Okay. So
on that bombshell.
Hopefully we're around the same when I do it. Sorry. Go on, James. Carry on.
All right. Yeah, go on, James. Where are we now?
Happy New Year.
Oh, no. I thought we'd already done this bit. I thought we were doing this.
No.
All right. Go on, then.
No, Happy New Year.
Happy New Year, James. No,
thank you. Happy New Year, John and Ross. Welcome back to the 41st episode of the General Witchfinders podcast, part 2.
Wow.
Which episode number, James?
41.
Yeah, they're both part 41, which is part 1 and part 2.
That's why I gave it dramatic pause before
41A
Christmas.
And 41B, I think.
Yes, exactly, yes. Yeah.
So, I'm James in Bournemouth in southern England.
I'm still John Fountney, I think. I'll just check. Yeah. I'm in South Wales, which is still in the south of Wales. And it's the very last few hours, dear listener, of 2023.
Wow. I was going to say over your life. And I'm...
Feels like.
Yeah, he's going to regenerate at midnight. Or bi-generate. I'm Ross in Dorchester in Southern England. And this time we watched BBC Ghost Stories for Christmas, The Treasure of Ross Abbott. No, Abbott Thomas.
The Treasure of Albert what Thomas.
What an atmosphere. Sorry.
That'd be a great song to like see the new year. And we're probably...
Always. Absolutely.
We should expose another plate, I think.
Oh, dear lad, as many as you will. Ad speechit de celis ut absconditar videt. He looks down from on high to see what is hidden. Can that be a text?
It certainly sounds like one.
Unfamiliar to me. Habent investimentis suis scripturum quam nemo novit. They have on their vestments a writing which no man knoweth.
Well, if that's a text, it's not very edifying.
Oh, not all texts are edifying. Super lapidem unum septem oculi sunt. Upon one stone are seven eyes.
Right, so The Treasure of Abbott Thomas is a supernatural drama produced by the BBC as part of the A Ghost Story for Christmas series. Once again, directed by Lawrence Gordon Clark, the screenplay was written by John Bowen, writer of the series The Guardians. In a declining England of the 1980s, the UK is broken up and England is ruled by a fascist military force.
I thought we talked about this in a previous episode.
This sounds
yes.
good.
Yeah. Yeah. I remember this, although it's worryingly prescient, quite frankly.
Yeah.
Right, with an atmospheric musical score by Jeffrey Bergen, who also created the music for the BBC Narnia series and Monty Python's The Life of Brian. It is based on the 1904 short story, The Treasure of Abbott Thomas, by the aforementioned the aforementioned legend of the podcast, M.R. James. And the drama was originally broadcast on December the 23rd, 1974.
Okay, before we go further, 1974, Christmas number one. This is...
Slade.
Oh, Slade.
Almost. That was the year before. It's 1974.
Wizard.
No.
That was...
Mud, Lonely This Christmas.
Oh,
he'll be lonely this Christmas without you to hold. It'll be lonely this Christmas.
Now, what's amazing about that, dear listener, and again, here comes another one-star review, but the best thing about that, the Top of the Pops footage,
yes,
is Les Gray, the lead singer of Mud, during his performance, gets out ventriloquist. He gets a ventriloquist dummy out. And I thought, you wouldn't get your M&Ms doing that today, would you?
No.
You wouldn't get, oh, what's his name? What's his name? The annoying one. You wouldn't get Ed Sheeran doing that today, would you?
Breaking you wouldn't out, get Stormzy.
Like, so, stars were different.
Rapping to a ventriloquist dummy.
And a quick dummy. Oh, 70s pop. No, the whole Wizard Slade thing, again, this is one for the teenagers. The amazing thing is that was like the Blur and Oasis of its day, wasn't it? That was Merry Christmas, everybody, and I Wish It Could Be Christmas Every Day was released in the same year.
Wow.
They went head to head. What, you know, blimey, incredible scenes. And one of my favourite things is, of course, being a man descended from the Midlands, you know, both of them Midlands powerhouses of pop.
And
Slade. But the best bit is that I really love is I remember reading a thing saying that Roy Wood of Wizard, he basically got kids from a Birmingham primary school in to do the singing at the end. And it's really brilliant. You can really hear their Brummy accents if you listen closely.
Yeah.
When the snow starts falling and the band begins to play.
Amazing.
Listen out for it. You'll never unhear it. And then in the account that I read, apparently at the end, Roy Wood was in tears at how good it was. And he went, kids, where are we going to get? And they all went, number one. And he felt it was like the achievement of his life.
Amazing.
Awesome. Oh, man. I could talk about Roy Wood for ages. The man's been like, all right, okay, let's move swiftly on.
Yeah.
Right. Okay. Sorry, everybody. Right. So the Sorry, I've moved the script in the wrong direction as well. The drama starred podcast hero Michael O'Brien as the Reverend Justin Summerton,
and you know who he is indeed.
Fucking hell. destroyed our listeners' eardrums.
Awesome. He's back, yeah. And he's awesome. As listeners will remember, Brian was one of the stars of the classic BBC television play, The Stone Tape, made only two years previous to his appearance in this film.
He looks so much older in this, doesn't he?
He does look a lot older.
He does. In which he played the leader of a team of scientists who investigate the ghost sightings in a brooding Gothic mansion. This film also features Paul Labors as Peter, Lord Dattering, who apparently appeared in the fourth Doctor adventure, The Androids of Tara. Who fans? Frank Mills as Mr. Tyson, known for being considered for the role of one of the security guards in the film Life.
Apparently, that is what
Ross,
he's known
where
for.
Where did you dig that's that
the,
out?
That's the only piece of trivia about him on IMDb, that he was considered for like a very small part in Life.
The one that offered her a biscuit,
biscuit. Oh dear. Right, please refer to earlier episodes. John Harrington as Abbott Thomas, who had small roles in the television versions of Quatermass 2 and Quatermass in the Pit, as well as the two Doctor Who TV stories as Rinmol in The Dalek's Master Plan and Jim Holden in Colony in Space. Then also featuring Sheila Dunn as Mrs. Tyson and Virginia Balfour as Lady Dattering. They also appear in the film. Although James's original story was set in Germany for budgetary reasons, the television version was relocated to England. Clark used the grounds of Wells Cathedral in Somerset for the entrance to the well where Abbott Thomas hid his treasure. Wells Cathedral Chapter House and its adjoining steps were also used in various scenes, and I think probably of some interest to either international viewers or maybe even British viewers. That is where Edgar Wright filmed Hot Fuzz as well. So there's, you know, if you're a fan of Hot Fuzz, same location.
So that's the church. That's where Adam Buxton got killed in the homage to The Omen.
Yes,
the bit falling off the ceiling on Wells Cathedral.
Yes, and the whole thing's like a bit of a nod, isn't it, to British horror? Even though it's a crime film. But anyway, beyond that, right? So regarding the treasure of Abbott Thomas, Clark recalls John Bowen's script took some liberties with the story, which made it for the better. I think it's really quite a funny story until it gets nasty, although the threat is always there. James had a mordant sense of humour, and it's good to translate that into cinematic terms when you can. I always wanted to do a medium scene, and John came up with a beauty. I just heard myself echo back then, but that's fine.
Yes, slightly.
So yes, there we go.
So we open with this, with some orgasmic lady noises, which I was a bit worried about the kids hearing, so I had to.
It was strange, wasn't it?
I had to switch over to headphones when
It's a way to get the viewers' attention on the 23rd of December 1974, isn't it?
Yes. Or whatever. But we do have like the séance scene, which, as mentioned, there wasn't in the story, and we have a couple of charlatans who are trying to hoodwink
not the pop group.
Tim Burgess.
Tim Burgess and another one.
I don't know any of the other charlatans.
Well, I remember Rob Collins, but he died just before Ned.
He's the one that died. Yes.
Maybe he's the one they're trying to contact.
Yeah, maybe it was.
Possible.
Oh, country boy. Is that what the word is?
Okay. Let's move on.
you can hear the uncertainty in my voice as I was starting to sing.
Country boy.
Tim Burgess can sleep soundly tonight. Position is not under threat.
So this story, it changes the time period, I would say, and the setting. And in some ways, it totally divorces itself from the M.R. James original, but it creates something which is equally kind of valid, and that's quite unusual in an adaptation, because the stuff that's added and kind of put into it really does kind of propel it along a different kind of... it's in a totally different wavelength to the original. The M.I. James story is one of my least favourite M.I. James stories. It's quite boring and a bit formulaic. But I think the addition of the seance stuff here, and as James said last week in our Christmas Eve episode, the way that we set up the Michael Bryant character as the man of reason in this, and the way he debunks the seance, makes it all the more kind of horrifying for him, because the revelation of what comes to him as the, when he finds the treasure, that's the kind of, I think that makes more sense, because in the original M.R. James story, you don't have that kind of frisson of the rationality versus the horror aspect.
Mm.
Whereas I think this is one of my favourite stories, because
oh, really?
I like the aspect, the kind of like the treasure hunting aspect of it. It kind of Indiana Jones-esque kind of, yeah. Like,
well, I put down like it's like an it's like the Da Vinci Code.
Oh,
more than anything else.
Yes, very good.
It's kind of like a proto Da Vinci Code, well, yes, ahead of its time.
Yes. So essentially we have this sort of added on bit of fluff, like to put that him or someone who is a rational, clever person who can see through tricks and work things out, because essentially there's this a medium couple who are kind of preying on a rich lady who's who is it has died, was it was it a husband
her husband,
yeah. Then and they kind of have this whole thing where they got the sound of birds coming because it's something to do with a spirit of the air, so they've got this bird song playing in the room, and then they're talking to this long dead clergyman, and then Michael Bryant starts talking in ancient sort of Norman French and Latin.
He absolutely burns them, doesn't he? Yeah. He debunks them magnificently.
Yeah, then smacks him on the back of the head so that the little whistle he's got the back of his throat, which he's making the bird song with, pops out. It was fantastic.
And we have the interesting aside, like they're like, oh, and once again, they go out of their way to say, you know, I'm a rational man, I will follow the evidence. And they say, oh, but you're a man of God. And in this one, he says, yes, well, you know, most academics at Oxford and Cambridge in that time are men who have taken holy orders. And of course, you know, without turning this normally fun and breezy podcast too seriously, as I often explain to my students sometimes, I was like, well, that is often, if you weren't rich, that's how you got educated in a time before a classical education. Because I remember like learning various things about how like the monasteries, their role before Henry VIII had them all shut down, is that, you know, these were like civic centres. You could go and get beer from them. Mm. You know, they kept lots of cattle there. And the monks who worked in these monasteries would educate the poor and teach them to read and write. And so chances are, if you were poor and you went away to university, you probably would have been sponsored by the church. So I did think, oh, that's quite nice. I like that. Him saying like...
I always felt there was like quite a strong sort of gay overtone between the relationship.
Oh, massive homoerotic. Mm.
Again, it would have been a place where gay men would have been felt comfortable to go as well.
Yeah. Well, M.R. James himself.
Mm-hmm. Oh, I didn't.
If you believe the kind of, well, if you watch the, so Mark Gatiss did a documentary, yes, which was on in within the last 10 years. I'm not sure when it was on actually. And he kind of elaborates on a lot of the kind of homoerotic subtext in the M.R. James canon, but also talks about how that they would play these games where there was a lot of groping and kind of wrestling with young boys and stuff. And it's just a very difficult period of history for people who were like that, and who are like that. And I'm not sure if it's deliberate in this
I watched an episode of The Simpsons the other day, and there was a good bit where Homer
goes... That wasn't what I was expecting you to read.
Homer goes to hell, and they said there's like a train station there. So they basically said, because this is where things people used to have go to hell for, now get to go to heaven. So that the train comes in, or that the gay people get to go to heaven now, because you're allowed to be gay nowadays where you weren't back, and then the people who were doing stuff, and they're just saying, because like morality keeps changing, that you just keep going backwards and forwards to heaven and hell. And I thought it was quite a good joke and quite a good observation.
Yes. I don't think it's the crux of this, but I did get a big homoerotic overtone from it.
Yes.
Yes. I think the biggest bit is the fact that when Michael Bryant, our friend Michael Bryant, who is Justin Summerton, when he turns up to debunk this, at the, we haven't said this yet, at the invitation of his student, who is the young Lord Peter, Lord Dattering. And when he's introduced to his mum, he's like, oh, this is my teacher. And this is my teacher at Oxford. And she goes, oh, yes, he's spoken about you. And then she says, oh, you must be the reason that he does so well because he's useless. And he really takes her to task and says, no, your son's fantastic. You know, your son's great. As to how he knows this, but in what context. But the fact is that, as you're quite right, you know, they really do establish that they have a very close relationship.
Yes.
And the fact that, you know, he goes to his house over the, you know, is very strange. So, yes, we then learn as well that they decide, or we find out that Bryant is there to basically see if he can track down the who was it? I didn't write my notes. Got a bit weak. Oh no, that's right. Abbot Thomas, isn't it? Of course, yes. That's the name of the bloody. I do apologize, listener. He has turned up to find the titular treasure of Abbot Thomas, and we're told that the Abbot Thomas was taken before the devil, you know, before the people could get him.
Yes.
Yeah, yeah,
or something
yeah,
like
yeah.
that. And we find out that he was a man who had a number of interests, despite the fact he was an abbot. He was someone that, you know,
he was an alchemist.
Yes, alchemy, which is awesome. And I just put down, he sounds like he's the man. He sounds kind of cool and interesting.
But I also like the way that he's constantly sort of making, I'm not looking for the treasure. He keeps sort of like, but what he obviously clearly is. And but they're talking about this guy potentially had found the philosopher's stone. He worked out how to turn base metals into gold. When did people stop looking like that? For that? Because that was such a big, that felt like everyone was looking for that.
Well, Ross, when we started to understand more about chemicals and how chemicals work and the periodic table, I mean, you know, in that you cannot change, you know, how gold exists on the periodic table. But anyway, yes,
I bet
you're quite
there are
right.
Some
it was very
still
popular
out there.
For a long, long time.
Glastonbury.
I was about to say, in the same way that people believe that magical healing crystals are a thing. Probably.
Glastonbury.
So that's what our story then becomes. As we've said, previously mentioned, bit Indiana Jones, Da Vinci Code, as these two characters begin to unpack the mysteries and the clues that are hidden in and around this church. Which that's been kind of they figure it out. They have to go to another church where they manage to decode a stained glass window
on the water.
It's all quite good. It's
an excellent bit of photography there, John, isn't there?
Yes. Oh, it's beautiful. All of this is beautifully shot. Yeah.
No, I meant but they do photography in it. There's a
that part. Yes. I'm not so convinced by that part because the camera shakes so much as he's taken the lens cap on and off. He would have had nothing at all. But this is before cameras had shutter mechanisms. So what you did at that point was that you would just take the lens cap on and off, but you had to do it without moving the camera at all or it would ruin your plate. But yes, that does happen. But the other guy... strangely for this, because you know you think he's the rationalist and a scientist, he's more kind of keen to draw it out, isn't he, Michael Bryant's character? And then he's like, yeah, this is what I've got. It's probably a little bit more accurate than your photograph, which
but as with all photographs in ghost stories, something appears on the
well, of course.
Yeah.
Yeah, there's a little weird. You see, is there not a sequence where you see something kind of fluttering outside the window as well?
Yes, yeah.
And then you see the face, which is supposedly looking down upon where the treasure is. Mm. I couldn't really make out from that what it was meant to be.
No, not me either.
But the jump cut to a gargoyle, you know, makes you realize that it's actually meant to be a gargoyle.
Yeah, so they have to try and identify, find the gargoyle and see what the gargoyle was looking at.
Yes.
Essentially the only thing in the churchyard, which is like a big hole in the ground.
What has led them to believe that the treasure, or led Michael Bryant's character to believe, what has led him to believe that the treasure is in this place? Have I missed that part of this point?
There was something about his research.
Yeah.
Oh, really?
There was like four, they was looking for four different people, weren't they? And then they found the stained glass windows with the four people in.
And that's what yes, I remember now. That's what the boy is kind of thinking about while the seance is happening, isn't it?
He starts hearing voices, doesn't he?
Yes. I remember now. Because in the story, it's quite different, and it's to do with windows that are bought from Germany and imported into Britain after the Reformation or something to do with. Yeah, so as you said in the introduction, it's to do with the actual story is set in Germany, because the guy goes to find where the windows were originally part of in some kind of cathedral or whatever in Germany.
Yeah, so they managed to find, it did make me feel a little bit a bit of vertigo being up on top of the Wells Cathedral trying to find the correct gargoyle. So they got the young boy sort of climbing all over the roof to try to find the right one, but whilst Michael Bryant's been attacked by birds.
He's got the willies up there, hasn't he? And I don't blame him, to be honest. It looks
you need John Oates up there, really, don't you?
Or Fred Dibner.
Yeah.
So what happens then? Because my notes are rubbish for this. All I've got is homoerotic and substantial changes to the story so far.
they realise that certain parts of the window have been painted over. So they.
Oh, yes. Well, that then does chime. The way they've changed the pacing of the story here. And so they've already found at this point where they think the treasure is, which is this hole in the cemetery, isn't it? Whereas in the original M.R. James story, the part where he scrapes off the paint on the window frame, that tells him more about where the treasure is. Whereas this part comes after the hole in the ground, and it kind of loses a bit of momentum for me there, because it's like, what?
Then they have a code breaking session after that point.
Yes.
Don't they?
Does that just tell them what the treasure is at that point?
To be honest, I can't remember. I thought it was something to do with like them knowing how far
this
down
is what people listen
how
for.
Far down the well to go and what's written and what stone. Because he's basically saying it could be behind any stone in that well.
Well, yeah. I think this as a TV production, this has got loads of atmosphere, but I think the story has been kind of messed about with slightly too much at this point, because it's like once you found where the treasure is, you would literally just go and look for the treasure, wouldn't you? You wouldn't start scraping bits of paint off stained glass windows and stuff.
I think it's kind of saying we know it's in the well, but we don't know where to find it, and then they find that there's a certain stone which has got like seven stars or something on it. But it's kind of
I think it's seven eyes.
Eyes, yeah. But in my mind, from reading the book, it was a vertical well.
It's a well.
This is like almost like a storm drain sort of thing.
Yes.
It has to climb down.
Yeah.
Which kind of sort of, that kind of spoilt my, the picture of the story in my mind.
Well, it's ironic that in wells, they couldn't find a well to climb down, isn't it, Cleves? In my mind, it looks like the bit in the third Batman film that Christopher Nolan did, where it's the big kind of cylindrical thing that Batman has to climb out of escape. It's a bit like that, but a bit smaller.
I think you'll be surprised, John, if you ever listen to any of these podcasts, which I know you don't, you do refer to the Nolan Batman films quite a lot.
Do I really?
Yeah, I was listening to one the other day.
What was I referring to in that one?
I can't remember what it was. You were talking about Dark. You was talking about The Dark Knight, but you couldn't remember what it was called. But yeah,
the middle one is one of the best films I've ever seen, but the other ones aren't quite so good.
I just find with any Christopher Nolan film, the first time you watch it, they're brilliant. After whenever you watch off that, you think, this is way too long. I can't.
Yeah.
I can't watch the last hour of this.
I watched Tenet. I watched Tenet recently.
Tenet.
And I had absolutely no idea what it was about. The villain was rubbish. It's a very poor film.
Oh, I kind of enjoyed it.
I saw it in the cinema and I was so annoyed at the sound.
Really?
Oh, really?
I refused to ever watch it again.
Yeah.
Because you could barely hear it.
Yeah,
there was lots of stuff at the time saying that the sound's shocking. And, you know, it's like the special effects and the soundtrack were really loud. The dialogue is like... And it's like, an twisty-turny, high-theory, high-concept time film. It's like, I don't explain what's happening.
Yeah.
But then you just go, all right, yeah, whatever.
Yeah.
Just tell me what happens at the end.
Dunkirk's good. You know. Dunkirk's my favourite of his films, I think.
Well, Dunkirk's good.
Didn't like Dunkirk.
Did not?
No. You could see modern buildings in it, and I thought...
Well, yeah. God. Especially when you were... There was in Weymouth. He was, like, actually filming...
Where I know where that is.
Yeah, yeah. Well,
that's where they shot it.
Yeah, when they leave to go off on Mark Rylance's boat, that's all down in Weymouth.
Oh, no way. Yeah, because the first scene where they're walking down the streets and all the paper... Is there paper coming down? And I was like, all these buildings look brand new. It doesn't look like 1940s.
You see Weymouth Pavilion, which I think was built in the late 60s.
So anyway, where are we with this now?
Michael Bryan has gone down into the crypt. He finds where the treasure should be. He pulls the wall to one side, or the wall, kind of like a section of the wall comes off. And then it's my last note. I've just written... ooze.
Yeah,
there's a lot of ooze.
Yeah, there's some
suddenly sort of like a black ooze comes out.
Yeah,
and basically starts chasing him.
Yeah,
yes, it's a very effective series of jump cuts. It's a montage of like a face in a puddle, the ooze coming out, screaming, blah blah blah, and there's a bit of a. Is there not again a bit of a claw over the face, which is a bit of a trope of these.
Yes.
All that is done really well. I think this one for me lags in the middle where it becomes this slightly, like you say, Indiana Jonesy kind of where's the treasure thing. When you actually get to the treasure and you find out that there is a guardian, I'm doing inverted commas, that's when it becomes good because that's the horror and that's like...
Yeah, and this is where in a normal story you'd expect, well, one of these other versions of a... one of his ghost stories, this is where it would end, but it carries on, which is quite interesting.
Yes.
Yes, because it puts the willies up Michael Bryan, let's face it. There's no two ways about it. We're then told that he's kind of like in... he's in solitary confinement. He's become a recluse, hasn't he, while he recovers. And we're told it's nerves.
Mm.
He says, it's my nerves.
And the maid is annoyed that slime keeps coming up the stairs. And
Stairs, exactly. The slime is after him. And he says, I've forgotten his name, right?
His protégé.
I've turned off the IMDb character page. Yeah. Sorry?
His protégé.
All right, so yeah. His protégé goes to see him and says, oh, what did you find down there? And he's like, what was it? And he's like, it's worthless. It's not worth anything at all. Although, was I wrong or did I just get the wrong end of the stick? That when he then looks inside, it does look like a gold coin.
Yeah, he sees that it is gold.
But I think, Michael Bryant doesn't see it as that, though.
No, I think he's been unhinged at this point, hasn't he?
Yes. Yes. Oh, that's good. I didn't miswatch that. That's good.
No.
And then, you know, so they're kind of like, oh, and he's like, oh, okay then. And he goes, oh yeah, you know, there was nothing. And, you know, it was guarded by this thing. And now I feel that, you know, I'm in its sight. I'm in its grasp and it's going to get me. And then we have the final scene in which he's been sort of put into a wheelchair and sort of rolled out into the gardens. There is kind of very much like a coda conversation all about the unknown and death and what have you. And then with that, they kind of say, oh, look, the doctor's on his way to see you. And it's the classic kind of 1800s doctor, man in a wide brimmed black hat.
Yes.
Walking down towards him from this country lane. And they're like, okay, well, we'll leave you with the doctor then.
And then they leave him. And then Michael Bryant goes to turn to the doctor to say, oh, hello, doctor, how are you? And we realise, oh, my God, it's not the doctor. That was some kind of apparition. It's now just this black hooded figure. Basically, it's death has come for him. And then that be the end.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Good so, Michael Bryant good comes to a sticky end yet again.
So he did ask his protege to put the treasure back. Do we think he did it or not? Because it's never clear whether he...
We don't see... Well, he does it in the story, and that's the point of the story, yes, is right. that the storyteller in the story is asked to go from London to wherever the treasure is.
Mm. Well, does he get a telegram to come to Germany or something? Because I thought that how long it would have taken for him to send a telegram that then that guy would travel across Europe.
Yes, that's what happens. Mm. With this, you're not sure whether he has returned the treasure or not. I presume that he has. Mm. But yeah, I think the ending is very neat, actually, and it's a really good ending. You don't know whether it's creepy. A figure of the Grim Reaper. You don't know whether it's the abbot himself who has come back to visit.
Mm. Good point. Yeah.
So yeah, it's a good kind of ambiguous ending,
and I think it does sort of tie in with and a lot of these things. You see that sort of dark figure. In the distance, coming towards you, and sort of the oncoming death. So it's good.
Normally, being a little extra might be a bit much, but not when it comes to healthcare. That's why United Healthcare's Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, supplement your primary plan so you manage out-of-pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
When we first watched these, this was my favourite because I really enjoyed the the treasure hunting side of things. Mm. But watching them a second time, I think it's almost like too much for these kind of stories. Whereas the first one we watched last week, Stories of Barchester, there's not much plot, but there's a lot going on in it. There's a lot of there's a lot going on with the sort of the backstory and the kind of the legends and everything. Whereas this is quite it's a treasure hunt, and when they get there, it's just a monster or a spirit. So what do you want to give the this one?
This is a three for me, I would say.
Yep, a three for John.
Yeah, I'd agree with that. Yep. I enjoyed watching it, but whereas with the first one, there was so much going on that, and that sort of made me think a lot. This one, it was like, oh, it's enjoyable, and always nice to see Michael Bryant again, because as you know, you're a country lad and you know the sound of rat makes. Yeah. But apart from that, you know, it was fine. It was enjoyable, but... Yeah, that's fine. One and done for me there. So,
yeah.
A three.
Fantastic. Right, so do you want to talk about anything horrific, guys?
Very quickly, because we've been on for 2 hours. Last week we were on for an hour, and tonight we've been on for an hour.
Yeah, and also, you know, we are counting down now to that.
We're not far away from midnight,
yeah,
guys.
We need to go and get some top of our champagne, don't we?
I recently, on eBay, bought a pan book, which I'd seen, which is called A Guide to the Supernatural in England, Scotland, and Wales. I don't know what Northern Ireland has done to them. Haunted Britain by Anthony D. Hippersley Cox. And I think this is a bit of a cult book. It came out in the 70s. 73. It's quite, as I'm flicking through the pages here so Cleves and James can see, it's quite lavishly illustrated with photographs of the time. Ooh. But it's also... the kind of opening page is a great shot of a skull in a cupboard.
That's what you want.
So if you can find this on eBay, it's quite a riveting read. I've gone through it and had a good read about what's
is Dorset or Dorchester in there?
Well, let's have a look, shall we? I'm sure it is.
I think
you can edit out the delay while I find England. Obviously, it's not in alphabetical order. So, for Dorch, we've got Dorchester, St. Peter's Church. Mm. It's said to be haunted by Nathaniel Templeman.
Okay.
One-time rector. He appears only in order to remonstrate when some evil deed is done. Okay. He literally put the fear of God into two churchmen who, exhausted by putting up the Christmas decorations, thought they would refresh themselves with communion wine.
Oh.
So you've got Abbotsbury, you've got Lytton Cheney.
Yeah, only here.
You've got Lyme Regis.
Yeah.
Abbotsbury, home of PJ Harvey.
You've got Upline.
That's where PJ Harvey lives.
And you've got Betterscombe.
Cool. You need to take some photographs of those pages for me and send them over.
Actually, you've got quite a lot. You've got Wimborne Minster.
Yeah, that's where they got the...
Of course,
You've got Poole. The Crown Head in Market Street was described in 1966 by the Dorset Herald as the latest in a long line of local premises plagued by poltergeists.
Yeah, and that's
at
where
the hotel.
They saw mist and everything, yeah, I think.
Well, they saw audible, visible and telekinetic phenomena, Cleves. They include the sound of a body being dragged across the floor and the appearance of a fluorescent mist.
Yes, if you go to Dark Dorset, the haunted pubs of Poole, I played the sound of that body being dragged along. And we, when we was in that pub, doing our pub crawl of haunted pubs, we was talking about the sound of some children playing outside in the the courtyard bit. We looked out there and there was no one there, but we'd all heard the children playing out there.
That's good, isn't it?
Yes, that's a good
Derek Acora.
Yeah.
Derek Acora and Dell.
Yeah.
What was his goat spirit guide?
Sam.
Joey?
Sam. Joey.
Sam, sorry. Sorry.
That doesn't sound like a Native American name, James, is it? Like Sam does.
He was from was he Somalia, wasn't he?
Yeah, something like that.
Lovely. So are we're gonna probably review lot 249 or whatever it's called, are we?
If you like, yeah.
Next time. But we've already, actually, don't put this on because we've already seen it, haven't we?
Yes, we have seen it. Oh. So let's just all anticipate what we thought of it. I thought it was really good. What do you think,
James? I really loved it. I know Mark Gatiss has had some criticism before in the past, but I thought this one was really good.
Did you think John Logie Baird in Doctor Who was Mark Gatiss? Because I was like, Mark Gatiss in it. But... And it wasn't.
No, I didn't. No. Not at all, no.
Oh, okay. Okay. Well, we're counting down now. 10.
Yeah.
9.
8.
7.
6.
5. Thank you for excellent year. Thank you for all your support, and I hope you enjoyed the 10 episodes you got out of us this year.
Jesus Christ, really?
Not bad. Well, by me doing splitting this into two, it ended up being 10 episodes. So,
wow, really?
Yes. Yes, and we hope to see you next year for more. Well, this year. I hope to see you later in this year for 2024.
No, but it will be this year now because it's just gone midnight.
Yeah, it is. Yeah. Professional. Yeah, I'll be there in a minute. Someone's just coming with a lump of coal. So I've got to go.
It's Fred West.
Yeah, oh God.
he's climbing through the letterbox.
I've got to go. Okay. Let's hope we all survive this year, and I'm looking forward to the new government, which will be coming in at some point this year.
Yes. Thank God.
Fingers crossed.
And Happy New Year, and we'll see you all.
Happy New Year, wherever you may be.
Later this month.
Have light and peace.
Happy day.
Bye. Well done, everyone.
Good job.
General Witchfinders. Support the show and continue the conversation at patreon.com/generalwitchfinders. Subscribe and spread the word at generalwitchfinders.com. Farewell, and don't have nightmares.
Okay, here we go.
I'm eating a chocolate croissant, by the way, but I'm not going to stop, so right. Just live with it.
Okay. That's the start of the autobiography. That's the first line. Well, I'm not going to stop, just live with it.
Let's pretend it's like New Year's Eve, sort of like party food from John's just popped upstairs from the party, which is raging downstairs, just to do a little recording for us here on New Year's Eve, waiting for the hootenanny to kick off.
Oh dear. Right. Rag and Bone Man will be on Hootenanny, won't he? He tends to be a regular fixture these days.
I'm hoping Ed Sheeran, for Amy Winehouse
So, what was the drunkest you ever got on New Year's Eve?
I don't think I've ever.
Oh, you know what it is, Ross.
That's when you drank loads of Bailey's, wasn't it, in Wimborne? And then.
Yes.
And my brother had to sort of nurse you to health dress as a Teletubby.
Correct. Because what happened, dear listener, is Ross and I went out on New Year's Eve, and both of us had one of the rare occasions where we could afford drinks. We both had money. And we just did this thing where we said, right, it was Ross's idea. I remember this quite clearly. Ross said, what we'll do is we'll take it in turns to go up and buy drinks, but you've got to drink whatever the other person brings back.
Right, okay. I can't remember doing
so that. So it was just... there you go. You see, that's what happened. And so we've been drinking a lot of vodka. And then you came back, or either possibly I came back with, I can't quite remember, with some Baileys, which is like, and of course the cream in the Baileys just curdled in my stomach. And I was just horribly sick. Horribly, horribly sick. Fortunately, I wasn't too sick anywhere. I didn't, you know, kind of bespoil the Cleaver family home. I managed to get to a toilet, but I pretty much just lived in Ross's bathroom for the night and then Ross's brother came back early in the morning to find me
dressed as
in a state of disrepair.
Lala, I think it was. One was the green man.
He was dressed as. Yeah, yeah. So yes, that was the drunkest I've ever got on New Year's Eve.
I can't remember. I don't think there's not often I actually. I can remember actually. I got. I was dressed as Wolverine. On Weymouth seafront, and there was some other guy was dressed as Postman Pat in a cardboard Postman Pat van, and I spent most of the time talking to him.
Fuck's sake.
My wife couldn't find me because I was talking to Postman Pat.
Oh my god, fathers.
Only to find you is that there was no Postman Pat.
I'm usually driving, so I never... I think only since COVID have we really been in the house. So, and so we've just done nothing the last few years. Watched
Who's the Nanny.
Yeah. Comes to us.
Pow! Jailbreaker! Wheeljack! Ironhide! Mirage! Sunstreaker! Sideswipe! Autobots, start your engines! Ready, Prime?
Let's roll!
Yeah, it's... They were on a cusp at that point of the figures and then the cars and whatever looking like something. And then after that, it was just like the figure looks... A bit like a figure, and then the car just looks like nothing.
Yeah, they over.
I think the triple changes. It all started to go a bit wrong with like triple changes and stuff, didn't it? Because they just look future. Mm. Yes, futuristic cars don't just crap. Whereas like Jazz and all the original ones were so good, and like Megatron, the proper.
I always wanted to start. Was it called Starfire?
After that, it all started to go
Jetfire.
Jetfire.
Starscream or Jetfire? Yeah, I had Jetfire.
No,
don't think so.
This is a story. Now, did I not tell you this the other day? Voice note.
Belt buckle.
Oh, he's looking good, James, isn't he? Yes,
Rodimus Prime,
the future leader of the Autobots.
There, you want to get cupped? Go.
Once he's got the Creation Matrix, looks amazing, doesn't he? Yeah, that's right. And Blur. It was cut Blur and Hot Rod, wasn't it? I had Jetfire because my father used to come and visit like every few months, if he could be bothered. And then we'd go to Wellesbourne Market, and he'd spend quite a lot on me because he never bothered to do anything else.
Wow!
But he basically bought me Jetfire in like a boxed Jetfire, and I remember the box. And
I can remember when I was at my uncle's house once near Christmas.
That looks amazing. Someone,
I found Jetfire in the box. You're not meant to have seen that. And I was thinking, I'm going to get Jetfire for Christmas.
Yeah.
My cousin got it. It wasn't me. You know, it was like,
But
wasn't Jetfire like from some other range of toys? He wasn't actually a Transformer.
Yes.
I think he was. Was he not Bandai? And then they bought the rights for Bandai. But so I had Jetfire, and then I remember having him for quite a long time. But then don't know what happened to him. My mother probably sold it after I left home. And I saw one the other day, boxed £390 in the shop in Cardiff. Because I went down, I caught the train down to go and have a look at Transformers in this shop. The only one they had left was Jetfire for £390, and that's. I'm trying to sell my Rover 75 because it needs.
We had loads of Transformers
for the MOT.
We had a load.
Can't even get that much for fucking car. And then
the boys over the road swapped us all their Transformers for an old ZX Spectrum. So we had all the Dinobots. We had Ultra Magnus, Metroplex. Yeah. We had the Constructicons that all joined together into like the big. We had all of those.
Yeah.
And then we sold all of them. Including like Skulkamok and all that kind of stuff.
Devastator.
At car boot sale in order to get enough money to buy an Atari Lynx. And then.
Yeah, I loved Skulkamok.
And then our mum made us spend the money to go to Minehead instead.
And how much is that worth now?
We had to wait to Christmas to get the Lynx.
The Lynx.
Yeah.
I saw.
That's the kind of thing my mother would do. She opened a savings account for me and then spent all the money that was in it.
They know full well that it's all like geeks in their 40s like us now. I see they've started re-releasing all the original G1 again, John. I saw because like Forbidden Planet. Because Soundwave was the one that I always wanted and never got.
Mm.
And you can get him and you know, you're like... Rosebud. Yes.
I want that.
Like, it won't make you happy, you're already about. Yeah. At the same time, it's like,
I know.
I could.
Have you seen the actual
now?
Robotic Optimus Prime that's transformed?
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's really good. Yeah. Yeah.
I think so, yes. Yes.
Mm.
Mm.
I mean, I was more into the comic than the toys. Really? I loved the comic. And I've rebought some of the issues that I remember now, and they are spectacularly like spellbinding, just amazing. Target 2000
goes in the volcano.
The one where Galvatron finally dies, and he's no, he doesn't die in that one. He doesn't die in that one. He dies in
with Death's Head,
a one called Time Wars, which obviously predates Doctor Who. Death's Head's in it, yeah, but he is kind of the forces of time, like, rip Galvatron to pieces, and he turns into this skull, and then he just disappears. And I bought that probably in lockdown, and I, looking at it again, I was just like, fuck, this is magical stuff. The writer, Simon Furman, amazing.
I was moaning about my kids just playing Minecraft
just
all the time.
Something
but I said,
else.
Well, but at least they're building, they're making things, even though it's virtual. I went in there the other day, looked what they was doing. They built all this city and everything. And I said about, you know, what I built was like draw pictures. So I did an alternate timeline of Transformers if they landed in World War II. And Optimus Prime was a big searchlight, which he transformed into. and the Decepticons joined up with the Nazis, and Megatron was a big tank. Yeah.
That's quite good.
So welcome to Transformercast.
He became a tank.
I'd listen to that. I'd do
things, yeah, didn't he? But all. Have you recorded all of this? What I was thinking earlier, we should try and do a podcast where what we review
I could probably do a version of it. Okay. This is the version where we talk about the film. Now, this
just
is the
to
bit,
see like how far like we can take
1 hour 20. Now, here's the version where we don't mention the film, which is 1 hour 15. And then...
yeah. And then just get right to the end and go, anyway, so tonight we're talking about Dr. Fibes Rises Again, and then it just... So which one?
Want flexibility? Take yoga. Want flexibility with your health insurance? Check out United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly medical, dental, and vision coverage that may be right for you. More at uh1.com.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.